Don't go, Ellie said. She put a hand on Alex's arm. I don't want to go to sleep. Tom grinned.
No arguments, kiddo. We gotta get an early start tomorrow. Mina will stay here and we'll be right outside, okay? We aren't going anywhere, and we've got my Winchester and I got a Mossberg for Alex here. We'll be fine.
If we'll be fine, how come you need guns?
Tom looked so perplexed that Alex almost laughed.
Honestly, Ellie, everything will be okay, she said. The guns are for just in case. Maybe I should have a gun.
I don't think so.
Guns are pretty heavy and your hands are too little,
Alex said, relieved that this was true.
We'll watch out for you. Promise?
Pinky swear. If you're ever in trouble, all you have to do is yell and we'll hear you.
I don't have a very big voice,
Ellie said. I know how to fix that.
She dipped a hand under her sweatshirt and fished out her silver whistle, warm from her body heat. You blow on that, and I bet you $10 they'll hear it in the next state.
Ellie held up her hair as Alex slipped the chain over the girl's head.
The girl cupped the whistle in her hands as carefully as a robin's egg. Who gave it to you?
Swallowing was suddenly very, very hard. She felt Tom's eyes on her.
My parents. I was a little younger than you. They gave it to me on my first camping trip.
Ellie said gravely,
You have very smart parents. You know, Tom's right. It's pretty late,
Alex said.
Come on, I'll tuck you in.
Chapter 24 Outside by the fire, Tom said, That was pretty good. Alex tried on a smile that kept slipping from her lips.
She's just scared, she paused. Me too.
Makes three of us, Tom said, and took her hand. The act was so natural and so quiet, not a come-on at all. She didn't flinch, although her heart did that little thump-bump-a-dump again. His hand was calloused, but his skin was warm, and his grip was strong. It was weird how he was about her age, but seemed older somehow. Maybe that happened when you went to war. Cut yourself some slack, he said. Ellie would be dead if not for you.
I don't know if you noticed, but you saved us, she said.
True, but I had a gun.
And we got lucky.
Half the battle, like Stan and Earl.
Can you tell me what happened?
He hesitated, then said, I still don't get it all. The zap happened, and Stan dropped dead, just dropped.
You mean like Ellie's?
Tom was shaking his head. I don't think so. Not like her grandfather. Stan was a healthy guy, in his 40s, I think. He might have had a pacer or something else mechanical, but I doubt it. Earl had just turned 65. I know because Jim talked about throwing his dad a big party when he got back from Afghanistan.
Did he bleed?
Jim? Yeah, but so did I. So did Earl.
How did Earl die?
But she thought she knew.
Was it Jim?
Sighing, Tom gave her hand a squeeze, then let go. Jim was okay at first, but then his headache came back worse than before, and then his memory started to go. Like the second morning, he didn't know what a spoon was for. It only lasted a second, but it was really spooky. And then it wasn't just the spoon, it was everything. Like his memory was full of holes. God, this was all too familiar.
How long before he...
She faltered over the word.
Before he changed.
End of the second day is when things went to hell. We'd made camp, mainly because Jim had stopped talking and was just staring, like guys after an IED's gone off, or if they've seen too many other guys get blown up. Combat fatigue, shell shock, you know. I went off to get water, and then I heard the shots. By the time I made it back, it was over. I got off two shots with the Winchester, for all the good that did. His voice faded. She waited. I think the reason Earl died was because he hesitated, or maybe he was firing wild. Jim was fast when he was sane, and you saw him. He was crazy and fast. Earl probably couldn't believe his kid was coming after him. After that, I couldn't just leave. I kept hoping Jim would snap out of it. Tracking him took some time. Whatever else he was still partly Jim. He knew how to evade. It was part of our training. Then I started to find animals. You could tell that something had been at them. Know what I'm saying? When she nodded, he said, "Then I heard Ellie, and..." He spread his hands. "You know the rest."
"I'm sorry you had to shoot your friend," she said.
He looked away, but not before she saw the sudden shine in his eyes.
"You know what I don't understand? Why not me or Earl? Why did Stan die? And why, out of all of us, only Jim?"
"But it wasn't just Jim," she said.
"Yeah, Ellie told me about those kids. Still doesn't make sense."
"What if it's got to do with age?
How do you figure?" Since the idea had only just occurred to her, she wasn't sure what she was groping toward.
"I'm 17, almost 18. You're
20, 21 come December.
Was Jim older or younger than you?"
He thought about it. "Not too many years older, maybe 24, 25.
"So what if being older means the change happens later?"
"Maybe." He scratched his head. "That doesn't explain why Stan died. You and I are younger than Jim, but those brain-zapped kids you saw were also about our age. Only it can't be just age, because we're okay. So is Ellie." "So far." He didn't say that, but he might as well have. She said nothing for a moment. The fire popped. A shower of sparks flared, then died. Tom's scent, that complex, musky spice, touched something deep in her chest, and that made her think of something else.
"The dogs smelled Jim, and so did I. I smelled those kids, but Ellie didn't. But what does that mean?"
"What about smell?" she asked. Tom looked confused. "Smell?"
"Yeah. Did he complain of a weird smell before he, you know, changed?"
"No," Tom said. "I don't believe he did." That night, the moon was green. Chapter 25. The sound reached them 2 days later, while they were still several miles from the station. At first, Alex thought the sound might be a woodpecker, likely a big pileated thwacking some tree. As they got closer, though, she realized that what they were hearing was not an animal at all. The sound came very fast, a trip-hammer stutter, para-para-para-para-para. Now the dog was alert, balanced on its three good legs.
"What is that?"
Ellie asked. She'd tired some miles back, but Tom had insisted they go on. When she refused to budge, he'd swept her into his arms and labored up the nearly vertical corkscrew of a trail without complaint. Now Ellie squirmed out of his arms, and her face broke into a smile that stretched from ear to ear.
"It's a machine! Tom, it's an engine!"
"Shh!" Tom cocked his head, listening hard. "I think she's right," Alex said. Her breath thinned. She stood stock still, every nerve quivering like a hound on point, and her fatigue, these last 6 miles had been all uphill, vanished.
"Oh my God, that sounds like a generator! Tom, maybe they fixed things somehow, not just here, but everywhere." "See? See?"
Ellie beamed in triumph.
"You're wrong!"
"I don't like it." Tom did not smile. "First off, not every generator uses a computer, which means that someone had to throw the transfer switch manually. But it's been too long. 8 days since the zap."
"So what?"
asked Ellie. "So that means the generator's been running for a really long time, and most generators can't, not without refueling about every 4 hours."
"Maybe they're really prepared and have lots of fuel. Or maybe the generator wasn't started until only a couple days ago, or they've run it only once in a while. Who cares?"
asked Alex. "There's still plenty of daylight," Tom said. "Why run a generator if you don't need to?" She couldn't come up with a good answer.
"Look, whoever's there has power. That's..."
She saw the sudden, intent expression on Tom's face.
"What?
Don't you hear it?" Ellie frowned.
"Hear what?"
"Listen hard, behind the engine sound." Tom closed his eyes. There it is again.
Alex shut her eyes and concentrated, and then she caught it, something low and hollow and rhythmic, not mechanical, but...
A song! Ellie gasped. It's music!
Okay, Alex had to admit that was very strange. Limited resources, 4 hours of power at a pop, and you waste it playing records? If Tom's EMP theory was right, it would have to be a record, too. A CD player wouldn't work, but an old turntable would. Would a tape deck? But Tom might be wrong, or maybe they grounded the players somehow.
If they can play music, Ellie said, that means you're wrong, Tom.
I hope I am, Ellie, Tom said patiently. I really do. But here's what's bothering me, honey. You're in the middle of the woods. As far as you know, there's no power, and you advertise that you've got it. You waste power playing music. Tom, Alex said, they're rangers. Maybe they're trying to attract attention. You know, tell people that they're open for business.
But what if they're not? Asked Tom. What if whoever's there is trying to attract attention for the wrong reasons? They all stared at one another.
Then Ellie said, You mean like a trap? At the same time that Alex said, That's ridiculous. But Alex was thinking, If Jim could remember his training, would a ranger remember how to work a record player, a tape deck, a generator?
Tom said nothing. All of them, Mina included, listened to the putta-putta of the generator, and in the silences between that unrecognizable line of music, Ellie fidgeted, then said,
Aren't we going?
Yeah, Tom said finally. He thumbed the carrying strap of his Winchester, shrugging from a cross-carry to his right shoulder, where he could get at the weapon in a hurry. You'll have to walk the rest of the way, okay? I know you're tired, and it's all uphill, so we'll go slow. But I need my hands free.
It'll be fine, Alex said to Ellie as they followed. She made the girl get between them with the dog, though,
and when Ellie wasn't looking, she draped the Mossberg over her right shoulder and rechecked the safety, just in case. Hours later, Alex inched closer to Tom and said,
Now what?
Tom only shook his head. The night had slammed down, a hazy galaxy of stars like sequins in black velvet. The moon would not rise for several more hours, a good thing, because that uneasy green color was like an old bruise, and it really freaked her out. No moon also meant that they could be fairly certain of near invisibility, although they crouched not 60 yards from the hulking skeleton of a fire lookout tower to their right. The tower was dark. The station was not. Set upon a rocky plateau, the station shone, each and every window of the low rectangle fired with light. Elongated, buttery yellow rectangles spilled over the ground, and Alex could see the corner of an armchair butted against one window and a tower of books on a low coffee table. Music seeped through the open windows, and they had listened as Mick Jagger vented over his lack of satisfaction, only to give way to Robert Plant's screaming about eyes shining bright red. There was so much light, the panes of a nearby structure to the far right sparkled. A garage, probably. Alex picked out a twist of gravel.
Look at the dog, Tom said into her ear.
She did. Mina was staring at the station with what seemed like curiosity, but not alarm.
Not like the reaction those wild dogs showed when they smelled Jim, Alex thought.
Then, feeling a little stupid, hoping that Tom wouldn't notice, Alex took a cautious, experimental sniff. The only aroma she detected was wood smoke mixed with creosote. Fireplace, or maybe an outdoor fire pit, but that was all. No dead smell, which might not mean a thing. What, she'd turned into a bloodhound?
If the dog's not worried, then it's probably okay, Tom said. Let me just check it out.
Wait.
Alex put a restraining hand on his arm.
I should go with you.
I'll be fine. I've done plenty of recon.
Don't you always have someone watching your back? If I stay up here, I'm too far away to hit anything with the Mossberg.
Believe me, if you have to go shooting at people, I'm just as happy to keep you as far away from me as possible.
She bristled.
Hey, don't diss me. It's not like I've never handled a gun before.
I'm only saying the odds are against there being anything to shoot at.
If the odds are so against that, why are we having this discussion?
Are you always this difficult?
Ellie piped up. Yes, she is.
Hey, said Alex.
Tom said, This isn't Iraq or Afghanistan. I'm just checking things out. Besides, someone needs to stay with Ellie.
Well, at least take the dog.
Ellie.
Alex is right, Tom. Mina searched for bombs.
You guys watch too many movies. There won't be any bombs, Tom grumbled. But he took the dog.
They watched as the darkness swallowed up first Mina and then Tom. Robert Plant had finished screaming about his dreams, only for the music to segue into a bluesy guitar and something about a boss man. Alex didn't know the song. She was straining so hard to pick up any sign of movement, outside, in the house, that her eyes felt as if they were going to pop right out of their sockets.
Alex?
She kept her eyes trained on Tom as he darted right, well away from the tidal wave of yellow light washing over the rock, and headed for the garage.
What? I'm sorry.
What for?
For saying you're a pain. I mean, you are a pain sometimes.
Look who's calling the kettle black.
What?
Never mind. She twisted around to flash the girl a grin she probably couldn't see in the gloom.
It's okay. I just didn't want to be alone. Oh, look, there he is, there he is.
Tom peeled out of the darkness to their left. He was crouched very low, his head well below window level. Mina was only a dark slink, briefly visible as the two cut beneath the far left window and then were gone. Alex watched as Tom eased his head up for a peek and then ducked down again before duck-walking to the front door. Alex saw him dart quickly from left to right, and she tensed, waiting for the boom of a shotgun. None came. A moment later, Tom and the dog wheeled into the house. She could see him clearly now, passing into the room on his left, stopping for a moment to stare at the books. He reached for something, and a second later Billy Joel cut out, and then there was nothing but the sputter of the generator. After another minute, it felt like 20, Tom and Mina reappeared as dark silhouettes in the doorway. Tom waved an arm.
Let's go, she said to Ellie, then grabbed at the girl's waist as she started to spurt forward. Me first.
Why?
Alex could hear the eye roll, but she didn't smile.
Because I'm a pain, and in case Tom missed anything, they can't get to you unless they go through me.
The station was deserted and frigid. Whoever was here left in a hurry, Tom said. He pointed to the coffee table. Alongside the books were two plates crusted with petrified spaghetti and three mugs still half full of scummy coffee. A red wooden clothes tree with two sheepskin jackets, one men's medium, one woman's small, and a khaki ranger's hat, was snugged into one corner. A braided rug lay in front of a stone fireplace, the charred remnants of several logs resting in gray ash.
Boy, they were messy,
Ellie said. Where would they go? Why?
I don't get this, Alex said.
She was uneasy, her skin prickling with anxiety. The cabin was a jumble of odors, rotting food, gray ash, dish soap, the metallic sting of tracked-in dirt, even a spike of peppermint chewing gum, probably squirreled in one of those jackets. But no roadkill, none of that dead meat stink, so that was good. Still, the setup was freaky. Her eyes flitted over a bookcase filled with paperbacks, and beside that, a vintage-looking cassette and speaker system balanced on a rickety pine table strewn with tapes. Probably mixes, she thought, judging from the cassette still lodged in the now-silenced player. After so many days with nothing more than a few flashlights and firelight, the artificial light was too bright, more like an assault, and hurt her eyes. The sound of the generator had receded to a muted stutter.
This food is old, but the generator's still going. Other than the lights, what's the generator powering?
Not much, said Tom. When he turned to gesture behind him, the wood floor squalled. Refrigerator, as far as I can tell. The record player. There's a television in the kitchen, so there's probably a satellite dish on the roof. Doesn't matter, though. It wouldn't work now, anyway. There's a wood stove in the kitchen, one of those really old cast-iron jobs with an oven, and a hand pump for water. No toilets or showers. There must be an outhouse.
No shower?
Ellie asked, clearly dismayed. Just a wood tub in the kitchen next to the stove, and a big old sponge. Cheer up, kiddo. The Amish do it. Betcha those folks up near Oren are doing that right now.
Well, I'm not Amish, and we're not in Oren, Ellie grumbled. What about heat?
Alex said. Heaters draw a lot of power.
Yeah, that's a good thought. No fireplaces in the bedrooms, but there are outlets, so there must be portable heaters somewhere. No washer or dryer, for that matter.
You mean they did their clothes by hand?
Ellie said.
By hand?
Must have. Tom scratched his head. This is all kind of weird. I mean, this station is pretty bare bones.
Not even a radio? Like, you know, to call for help?
When Tom shook his head, Alex wanted to point out that this was some piss-poor excuse for a ranger station, but only said,
So why keep the generator on if you're leaving? Maybe they wanted to find their way back,
Ellie said.
It's really dark.
They'd know the way, honey, Tom said.
So maybe they left the lights on to make sure people like us knew how to find them, so we'd come inside.
Tom and Alex shared startled glances. Jesus, I never thought of that, Tom said. Alex had visions of a sudden flash and then the boom of an explosion. Relax, this isn't Afghanistan.
You cleared it, right? There's nothing here, nothing outside?
As far as I can tell.
What about the garage?
I only looked for a second. There are a bunch of tools, maybe a snowmobile or two, but I definitely saw a Jeep, and come to think of it...
What?
Tom gave her a queer look. There's a pretty old truck in there.
Wait a second. Didn't you say that older trucks and cars might work?
When Tom nodded, she said,
So why didn't they take it? Maybe it's out of gas, said Ellie.
No, there's an in-ground pump by the garage.
So? Maybe they couldn't fill the tank.
Or it might not be as old as I think. I only saw it for a moment. Tom debated another half second, then said, Look, if it was a trap, whatever was supposed to happen would have by now. Most booby traps are set with trip wires, and we already know that a cell phone signal wouldn't work here anyway. Now I opened every door and every closet, the pantry. On the other hand...
What?
Tom inclined his head at the open windows. You want to light up a target? That's the way to do it. Only my guess is they'd have shot us by now. Alex didn't think that was such a comfort.
There's no one out there.
That we saw...
Maybe they're only gone for now,
Ellie said. She was sitting cross-legged on the floor with Mina at her side.
Mina would have known,
Alex said, and maybe me too. Ellie shrugged.
Maybe they'd check back to see if someone's taken the bait.
She's got a point, Tom said. He ran a hand through his hair. For all we know, turning off the generator is some kind of signal.
Maybe the generator will blow up if you turn it off.
Ellie suggested.
Can you check for that?
Alex asked Tom. Tom nodded. But I'm wondering if maybe we should stay at all.
You mean go back? Outside?
Ellie said. The bright brassy light had washed her skin yellow, and the dirt smudging her cheeks, neck, and ears pewter gray. Her blonde hair was lusterless and clotted with trail rubbish, and her Hello Kitty parka was nearly black. Alex thought she probably looked just as bad, and suddenly the idea of a long, hot soak made her nearly faint with anticipation.
I don't want to go back into the woods,
Ellie said. We wouldn't have to go far. We could even stay on the lookout tower. Tom's eyes widened. Oh, shit. This time, Alex insisted on taking the Winchester.
It's not like the dog can climb up with you, and the Winchester has a scope.
Yeah, but by the time you see the muzzle flash, I'm dead. But Tom didn't have any better ideas, and in the end he found that the tower was little more than a platform with a roof, and deserted. They all agreed then. They were psyching themselves out. The only precaution they took was to cut the generator, which Tom did as Alex, Ellie, and the dog waited at a safe distance. There was no kaboom, and after doing so long without electricity, getting rid of the racket and that brassy artificial light was a relief. As tired as they were all too keyed up to sleep, and so set about putting the station to rights. Alex scrounged up lanterns, and Tom brought in armfuls of wood from one of two piles laid out neatly beneath a lean-to at the back of the station and got a fire going in the wood stove. Flopping alongside, the dog promptly dozed off. After Alex pumped water into several large pots, she set those on the wood stove to heat, and then she and Ellie gathered up dirty dishes to add to those already piled in the sink. While Ellie explored the bedrooms, Alex took a quick inventory of the refrigerator and pantry. There was fruit in the refrigerator, oranges and apples, as well as eggs, a carton of milk, butter, a variety of vegetables, and a bonus, two packages of ground beef, still fresh, and a string of sausages. Steaks and a roast and two cartons of ice cream, chocolate and Rocky Road, in the freezer. The pantry was as well stocked as the woodpile, stuffed to overflowing with canned goods, boxes of dried fruit, powdered milk and instant eggs, packets of beef jerky, bags of sugar and flour and baking soda, as well as tins of baking powder, cartons of oatmeal, grits and barley, dried beans, two sacks of potatoes, onions and garlic, and of course, MREs. There was so much food and so much variety, Alex got a little giddy. She was perched on a step stool, riffling through a shelf packed with candles and matches, when Ellie came to the door. "I found a whole bunch of clothes and soap and shampoo and towel." The girl's eyes widened as her flashlight swept over the pantry's shelves.
"Wow! We could live here forever!"
"Maybe not that long," Alex said, "but it sure looks like they were set for the winter."
"Hey, hey!"
Ellie swooped on something on a bottom shelf. She came up with a bag of chocolate chips.
"Can we make cookies?"
The girl's face shone with so much excitement that Alex laughed.
"Sure, but not tonight, okay?
Let's get cleaned up, and then we'll scare up something to eat. Tomorrow we can see about cookies. Show me what you found."
Oh, I almost forgot,"
Ellie said as they left the kitchen and the still-sleeping Mina. In the common room, they passed by Tom, who was scooping the clog of ash from the fireplace.
"I found the basement."
Tom paused, shovel in one hand, broom in the other. "What basement? Where? I didn't find a basement."
"In the bedroom,"
Ellie said, all but adding, "Duh." She tugged on Alex's hand.
"Come on, I'll show you."
"Okay, that's a weird place for a cellar," said Tom. They were in the smaller of the two bedrooms, clustered around a small rug doubled over on itself to reveal a hinged cellar door cut out of the floor. Ellie had dragged the door open by pulling on a metal ring set flush to the wood. "And you found it how?"
"I heard it," Ellie said. "When I walked on it, the wood squeaked, and then when I pulled back the rug, there it was."
"I can't believe I missed this," Tom said.
"Maybe I have better ears," Ellie said.
"You're heavier," Alex said to Tom. "Everything squeaks. Honestly, you'd almost have to know it was there." She aimed her flashlight into the dark maw. The light rippled over a set of narrow wooden stairs and brick walls. At the very bottom, she saw that the floor was poured concrete. This close, she could feel cold air feathering up from underground. And then she smelled it. Wet rock, moist earth, and... She sucked in a sudden breath. "What?" Tom asked. The stink was almost non-existent, but absolutely unmistakable.
"Probably nobody down there now, though. It's too faint."
Still, she didn't like it.
"I'm not sure we should go down there."
Tom's forehead creased in a frown. "Why not?"
"I've been down already,"
Ellie said. Tom rounded on the girl. "You went down without..."
"Guys, it's just a great big room with a couple of boxes and a big metal, you know, box."
At Tom's look of consternation, Ellie sighed.
"I just looked. I didn't touch anything. Come on, I'll show you."
"Ellie!" Tom and Alex said in unison as Ellie backed down the stairs. "Wait, Ellie," Tom said.
"Let me get..."
"And you said I'm stubborn," Alex said. "No, I said you were difficult." Tom turned on his heel and started for the hall. "Go down with her. I'm getting the shotgun. Don't touch anything."
"I'm not stupid," Alex muttered, but he was already gone.
And the smell was still there.
Ellie was waiting at the base of the stairs. "See," she said as Alex backed down. "It's empty except for the boxes."
Well, not quite empty. Her light glided over a workbench running along the near right wall. A rusted iron vise was clamped to one end, and there was a mousetrap atop the workspace, but no tools, and only a thin rat's coil of wire hanging from the pegboard. A haphazard stack of cardboard boxes were piled against the brick to the right of the workbench. "Christmas ornaments" was scrawled in black Sharpie on one. Another was labeled "fishing gear." One stood open, and Alex saw a tongue of black cloth. The dead meat stink was no stronger down there, though, and she thought Ellie would have mentioned a dead body or two. She heard the creak of Tom's footsteps overhead, and a spear of light pierced the darkness as he shone his flashlight down the stairs. "What do you see?" he called.
"It's like I said,"
Ellie called back. "Workbench? Boxes?" Aiming her light, Alex strafed the darkness to her left and froze. The metal cabinet was dark green, wide, almost directly opposite the stairs, and the door was open. Not much, maybe 6 inches, but enough so that when she moved a little to her left, her flashlight picked up a glint of metal, the twinkle of a scope. "Alex?"
"Tom," she said and smiled. "Tom, it's a gun safe."
"What?"
She heard Tom clattering down the steps fast. "Wait, so there are more guns?" Ellie asked. "That's good, isn't it?"
"I think so."
She started forward, reaching for the safe, wrapping her hand around the metal latch. "Good thing it's open, too. Otherwise, we'd have to find the combination." From behind, Tom cried, "Alex, no, stop!" Something slammed against her back as a bright orange flash erupted out of the dark and a shotgun boomed.
Chapter 26. The blast was deafening, loud enough that Alex thought her head would burst. Her ears shrieked with pain. The air split with the whir of a slug where she'd been standing just a second before. Her throat closed on the choke of burnt gunpowder, scorched cloth, and hot metal, and her mouth was watering, her eyes streaming. She could feel the icy cold of the concrete against her hips. She thought Ellie was screaming, but the sound was muffled in cotton. She was virtually deaf and could barely breathe. Tom had hit her from behind, knocking her to the ground, but now his body lay draped over her. He was not moving.
"Tom?"
She couldn't hear herself, but felt the word in her throat. Still half-stunned by the blast, she tried turning over. "God, please let him not be dead. Tom!" A moment later, his hand closed on hers, and relief flooded her chest. She heard the low drone of his voice, but couldn't make out the words.
"What?"
"Booby trap." His mouth was against her ear. "Are you okay?"
"Yes, I think so. What about you?"
"I'm fine." Tom's weight eased. The ringing in her ears had thinned to a high whine, enough so she could hear the dog barking from the bedroom overhead. Her head was killing her, and when she sat up, the darkness spun. Tom aimed his flashlight at her.
"You sure you're all right?"
"Yeah." She put up a hand to shield her eyes from the light, then spotted Ellie crouched a few feet away, mouth hanging open, tears flooding her cheeks.
"Alex, are you okay?"
The girl was crying and screaming at the same time.
"Are you okay?"
"She's okay." Tom wrapped up Ellie in his arms and pressed her against his chest.
"Honey, shh, calm down."
"But she almost got killed!"
Ellie shrieked. She grabbed fistfuls of Tom's shirt and bawled,
"I almost got her killed! If I hadn't been so nosy, if I'd waited for you, she wouldn't have..."
"This is not your fault, Ellie," Tom said. "You didn't touch the safe. Alex did. You didn't do anything. And see? Alex is fine." What she'd been, Alex decided, was lucky. Clearly visible now that the concussive blast had knocked the blanket askew, the shotgun was wedged between two boxes, its barrel aimed at the safe. The muzzle flash had ignited the cloth, which still gave off a stink of burning wool. Now that she knew what she was looking for, she picked out the wire attached to the trigger easily enough, and followed that to the mousetrap. A separate wire, cut from the same coil on the pegboard, snaked from the now-sprung trap up the brick wall, over exposed beams in the ceiling, and then down to the top hinge of the safe's door. When she'd dragged the safe open the rest of the way, the wire wrapped around the hinge had tightened, the holding bar on the trap had disengaged, and the force of the hammer snapping shut had taken up enough slack to pull the trigger. She felt Tom's hand on her shoulder and turned. "How about we all go upstairs and celebrate being alive?" he said. By the time Alex returned to the kitchen with Ellie, Tom had prepared a feast. Pan-fried hamburgers with all the trimmings, a huge salad, and fried potatoes. "Wow," Alex said. "I thought all you knew how to do was raccoon. Where'd you learn to cook?" "For your information, I love cooking," he grinned. "My mom's a fantastic cook, and so's my dad." "I don't suppose you figured out dessert?" "As a matter of fact," Tom produced a box of Oreos from behind his back. "Ta-da!" I liberated them from behind a sack of dog food. "There's one more box and a package of Malamars, too. Somebody didn't want to share."
"They had a dog?" Alex asked, and wondered what happened to it.
"This is very nice of you, Tom,"
Ellie said in a small voice. She was quite pale. No amount of reassurance from Alex had worked. The little girl blamed herself for what had happened down in the cellar. She'd been virtually mute as Alex stripped her out of her clothes, scrubbed her clean in the wood tub they'd dragged to a back bedroom, and then dressed her in a woman's flannel shirt and jeans rolled up to her calves.
"But I don't think I'm very hungry."
"Well, I'm starved." Dropping into a chair, Alex grabbed up a hamburger bun and spooned out a huge dollop of mayonnaise. Tom grinned. "Nothing like a little near-death experience to work up an appetite. Ellie, you want something? Feel free."
"I'm not hungry," Ellie repeated.
She looked uncertainly at Mina, who'd scrambled for the bowl Tom plunked on the floor and was now practically inhaling kibble.
"I should maybe just go lie down."
"That's fine, honey." Layering his burger with lettuce and tomato, Tom squirted a spiral of ketchup. "You do whatever you want. Pass the mayo, would you, Alex?"
"Sure,"
Alex replied, although her mouth kept trying to twitch into a smile. She caught Tom's warning look and rearranged her features to as bland a deadpan as she could manage. Alex understood reverse psychology when she saw it. She hadn't spent all that time staring at her shrink's carpet for nothing. As Alex forked a burger onto a mound of lettuce, she saw Ellie slide into a chair.
"Mustard,"
Ellie said in a very tiny voice.
"And relish, please."
"One spoonful or two?" asked Tom.
"Two."
Tom doled out relish. "And let me give you some of this tomato here. There, that's good. Try that. There's more where that came from." They ate in a silence that was comfortable and almost heartbreaking because it was so normal, and Alex thought that Tom was right. Food was fundamental. After so long a time of eating only in memory, feasting in actual fact, with all its aromas and tongue-popping tastes, was a celebration. The silence also gave her a chance to think about that cellar. Leaving aside how dumb she'd been, the promise of more guns had swept away every particle of good sense, that dead meat stink, however faint, meant one of two things. Either the Rangers had changed, or maybe some other brain-zapped crazy had been rummaging around down there. Either would account for why the Rangers had cleared out in a hurry. But why set a trap? She bit into her burger and slowly chewed as she thought the problem through. A booby trap like that would only work if you knew where the gun safe was. Tom had missed it. Ellie had found the cellar by chance. So presumably, only another ranger would know where the safe was, or that a cellar even existed. Say, hypothetically, there'd been two rangers. Say, one had changed, and the other hadn't. Had the normal one set the trap, hoping to kill the ranger who'd changed, or... Wait a second. Tom said Jim was still partly Jim after he went crazy. What if the ranger who'd changed set it to take out the one who was still normal? "That burger okay?" Tom asked.
"What?"
Alex looked up and realized she'd stopped chewing.
"It's great,"
she said around burger, and swallowed. But she thought, Those brain-zapped kids changed the very first day. Jim was older, and he changed on the second day and ended up just like those kids. And now maybe there's a ranger, and that would make four people who changed. Well, actually, there were five, because she had changed too, just not in the same way as the others. Not yet. Chapter 27 Tom looked up from the farmer's sink where he stood doing the dishes. Perched on a windowsill over the sink, a Coleman lantern hissed out brilliant, harsh white light. She asleep? About 30 seconds after she told me how she'd never sleep again, Alex said. Fingering up a dish towel, she accepted a dripping plate and began to dry. Actually, I don't think she would have settled down without Mina, and if you hadn't dragged out the mattresses and made up beds in front of the fireplace, how'd you get so experienced in dealing with kids? 12 years of four little sisters. Tom fished a handful of forks from the soapy water, scrubbed, dunked them in rinse water. Four? Ouch! What did you do wrong? Tom handed over the cutlery for her to dry. My parents split when I was 8. Then my dad got remarried, and he and my stepmom started cranking out babies. It was okay. Kids are cute.
Where's your family now?
She asked. Nowhere good.
What do you mean?
They live in Maryland, right outside D.C. In the Coleman's light, his features were flattened and void of color, all except the darkling shadows beneath his eyes. That's about as ground zero as you can get.
And you say I watch too many movies. Tom, you're making an awful lot of assumptions. We have no idea what's going on.
You're right. Tom huffed out a breath. Hang around a war zone long enough, you begin to always assume the worst. Sorry. So, what about your parents? She didn't stop to think about sugarcoating it.
My parents are dead.
His face fell. I'm sorry.
Don't be. You didn't know.
How long have you been alone?
That surprised her.
After the initial shock and embarrassment, why people were embarrassed she never did understand, unless it was one of those better you than me moments, people asked how her parents died. The way they asked always bothered her, as if they had this, well, hunger for bad news, like when people slowed down to look at an accident or gathered to watch lions feed at the zoo.
Couple years, but I'm not really alone. I live with my aunt near Chicago.
She paused.
You really think the cities aren't safe?
Depends. He was silent a moment, still staring into the dirty dishwater, and then he said, I think I know a way we can find out. The icy wind was a steady nor'wester from Canada, soughing through the lookout tower's struts with enough power to make the metal hum. Wrapped in the ranger's heavy sheepskin coat, Alex shivered as much from the metal's moan as the cold. The deeply emerald light of a waning three-quarter moon bathed the landscape in a dank gray-green. The color reminded Alex of a pond at high summer when the algae bloomed. At the very top of the tower, 70 feet above the ground, a walkway ran on all four sides of a square cab. Inside the cab was a waist-high table, and on the table squatted two pieces of equipment, one protected by a plastic sheath, and the other by a dark metal, vaguely military-looking rectangular box with six metal clasps. Beneath the plastic sheath was a digital, battery-powered CB, just as dead as all their electronics. She aimed the flashlight at the metal box as Tom forced the squalling clasps spotted with rust. I didn't want to say anything around Ellie, he said, levering the last clasp. I'd half decided to wait until tomorrow when it's light. Nearly everything looks better during the day, but now's as good a time as any.
What is it?
The main body of the unit was light gray, but the face was a darker gray-green, like the moonlight, and studded with controls, some lever-type dual controls that could be clicked from one setting to another, and others, like the round knobs Alex knew from Aunt Hannah's gas stove. There was a very large control knob in the center that controlled a black dial scored with white numbers and hash marks. Alex read the bold, silvered letters, Heathkit, and above that, in a much smaller inset, SB-101. Old ham radio receiver is my guess. I've seen guys who use these in hunting cabins. Tom pointed to a coil of wires spooling off the table to a car battery. All you need is the inverter here to make sure you don't fry the radio, and you're set.
Will it work?
It should. This is old, which means pre-solid state. The guts are tubes, not transistors. Of course, that presupposes there's someone transmitting.
Well, we can't be the only normal people left on Earth, she said. There have got to be other old radios like this out there, and if the cars don't work, there are still plenty of batteries. Besides, worst-case scenario, if you're right and it's all of North America, there are other countries. Someone's got to be somewhere.
The radio worked. Tom zeroed out the frequency and then slowly goosed the large dial, moving with exquisite care like a safecracker listening for the telltale click of a tumbler. There were no speakers, and they shared the one headphone, Tom turning up the volume loud enough that the crackle of static sounded like a hard rain on tin. There was a great deal of static, in fact. Too much, Tom said, especially for a cloudless night, which meant there must be a lot of atmospheric interference.
But what does that mean? She asked.
Shh!
He fiddled with the large dial, feathering it with two fingers.
I think...
Through the static sizzle, Alex heard a soft murmur, and then a single word. Control.
Wait, wait! She cried. Right there! I got it, I got it. Hang on.
The radio let out a sudden, sawtooth crackle of static.
Here, Tom said. I think...
Firestorms. The radio spat. Atlantic seaboard.
What?
Alex said.
System failures.
Ground-based. Secondary nuclear events.
Oh, Jesus, said Tom. What? Nuclear? What does that mean?
Alex asked. Do you understand what he's saying?
I think so.
Well, what?
In a bit.
Tom's free hand found her icy palm and held on.
I know you want it all right this second, but let's see how much we can get out of this, okay? If one guy's broadcasting, there's got to be another, and there are people in other countries, and then we'll have a better picture.
Picture? Of what? How could Doomsday get any better? She didn't want to wait. She wanted the answer now. But instead, she gritted her teeth and concentrated on parsing words from the static. Under the age of children, panic. More words, broken by sputters of static, dribbled from the headphones, words that were phantoms woven from thin air, spinning a nightmare. When that signal faded, they got another, this time from England, and then another from somewhere in Africa. By the end of it all, her eyes were still dry, but Tom's hand gripped hers hard enough to hurt.
So that's why the moon is green.
In the kitchen, next to the wood stove, Alex hugged a mug of tea from which all the heat had long since gone. 2 hours ago, they'd been scarfing Oreos, and now the world was in flames. Well, half the country, which was enough.
I remember now. We studied Krakatoa in world history. After that blew, the sunsets were bloody, and the moon was blue and green because of all the ash in the air. Our teacher said that the sky in that scream painting by Munch, he painted it that way because he'd actually seen it right after Krakatoa.
She looked across at Tom.
It's the same, isn't it?
Maybe. Tom hesitated. If what we heard is right. It might not be, though.
Tom, we've heard it a couple times over from different people in different countries, so there has to be some truth to it.
Unless they're just repeating a story.
But the story makes sense, doesn't it? You wipe out power and communications with a bunch of those E-bombs. Boom. No power. Nothing works. That guy from England said there were enough all over the world to knock out just about every country.
But it might be only rumors.
People panic. They can't know for sure without satellites. Which are gone. You're the one who said that would happen. You know that means there's no space station, either. Without computers, they can't come back here, and nothing works up there. So they either suffocated or froze, and now they're orbiting in that big, dead tin can. They'll be up there until the orbit decays and they burn up.
It still might not be everywhere, Tom said stubbornly. We only picked up 5 broadcasts.
We were lucky to get those. Besides, you thought of this days ago. What did you call it? Mutually assured destruction? Well, you were right. Good for you.
You know, I didn't want to be right about this.
Maybe not.
But hey, Alex let out a bitter laugh. You called it. Not all of it. Tom's face was bone white in the Coleman's light. His mouth was a black gash. I didn't think about E-bombs and targeting nuclear waste storage facilities.
More bang for the buck.
No, the facilities wouldn't explode like an atomic bomb.
Same diff. You're not the only geek in the universe. I had a very weird physics teacher who really got into doomsday, especially after that earthquake in Japan when those reactors in Fukushima started going critical. Besides, it's not that hard to understand. You set off bombs over the facilities. The water cooling the waste rods vaporizes. The rods melt and release radioactive steam, and then boom, just like back in the 80s with Chernobyl. Do you know how fast the core overheated there?
No.
Only a few seconds after they tried to scram the reactor.
Her eyes stung, and she could feel the bright burn of panic in her chest.
Like I said, he was a real geek. We spent 2 whole days on Chernobyl. It took something like 40 seconds for the temperature to spike and radioactive steam to build up to the point where that first boiler blew. 40 seconds. The fires went on for weeks, and that released even more radiation. That's what's happening out there, over and over and over again. Only it's 1,000 times more destructive because the facilities are bigger. Come on, you're the explosions guy. You know about firestorms and pressure waves from nuclear explosions. Everything melts or vaporizes, and that's just the first day.
Alex, because without power, there's no way to cool any of the remaining reactors or the rods in the facilities that weren't hit.
Alex, calm down. Which means they blow up, too. Every plant and every storage facility in the country, around the world, everywhere.
Hey, stop. He was out of his chair now. This isn't doing any good.
I don't care. The moon is green, Tom, it's green.
She thought she was shouting. The words cut like knives in her throat, but all that came out of her mouth was a tortured, watery wheeze.
The world's over. There's crap and dust and debris in the air, and people are dead. They just dropped dead when the E-bombs went off, and the ones who didn't will die. They'll starve or get radiation sickness or kill each other. And what about those kids? And Jim? We still don't know what happened to them, or if other people have changed, or when we will.
But we haven't. We're not dead. We haven't changed, and we're not going to.
You don't know that.
Yes, I do. Kneeling, he captured her hands. Look at me. Listen to me. I don't believe in God, but I do believe in fate.
What does that...
Shut up and listen. I've lived through firefights you wouldn't believe. You don't know how often I thought I was toast, that I thought, this is it, I'm going to die. But I made it home. I made it here. He reached up to cup the back of her neck. I made it in time to save you and Ellie.
That was luck.
It was fate. I was exactly where I needed to be at exactly the right moment. I refuse to believe that we've gone through all this just to die, he said fiercely. Now we are alive. We are safe. I am not going to let anything happen to you or Ellie, and that's a promise.
Fate or not, that's not the kind of promise you can keep. I've got a monster in my head that might have other ideas. Oh, but she wanted to believe him. She was shaking all over, a deep and visceral shudder so strong she was afraid she would blow apart.
But where are we going to go? We can't go back. Where?
We don't have to go anywhere right now. We'll think of something. Come on, I've got you. Ease down.
Somehow he'd pulled her from her chair, and they were on the floor, and she was clinging to him, every muscle tight as a coiled spring, and then he had clasped her to his chest the way he had Ellie, and they were rocking back and forth.
It's okay, I've got you, he said, holding her tight. Ease down. I've got you, Alex, I've got you.
She wept then, for Jack and Ellie and poor loyal Mina and her own dead parents, lost forever, for her aunt, whom she would never see again. She cried for Tom, and especially his little sisters who lived near D.C., which really was nowhere good. She even wept for the astronauts riding a doomed orbit beneath an alien moon. And Alex wept for fear, too. As bad as things were, she thought things were going to get a lot worse. Because where there was one Jim, one ponytail blonde, one basketball boy, there might be others, and no telling if one of them might be next. Chapter 28. A week passed, then two, and then three. They rested, inventoried their supplies, and ate well, even the dog. They passed the time reading from the Ranger's considerable selection of books, taking short hikes around the station, and throwing a frisbee for Mina, whose bum leg was clearly on the mend. They didn't power up the generator at all. The noise made them nervous, and the Rangers had left hurricane lamps and a lot of candles. After that first night, they told Ellie what they knew, and Alex was surprised at how calmly the little girl took in the information. Maybe not having any family to go back to made the world going up in flames a little easier to take. Or maybe, Ellie figured, they were a family now, which wasn't far from the truth. They slept before the fireplace in the front room, with Ellie sandwiched between Alex and Tom, who took turns keeping watch at night. Tom didn't sleep much, though, either because he couldn't or wouldn't. More often than not, Alex would awaken hours into her shift, look over, and see Tom propped on cushions by the front window, still awake, with the dog by his side. Every now and again, the dark silhouette of his head would turn as he looked over at them, his scent steady and sure, and she knew he would keep them safe no matter what. Yet he sat up often, and that made her think of stories she'd heard about guys who went to war and came back with their minds choked by nightmares. She didn't pry. She liked to think that she was only respecting his privacy, but that was a lie. Once, when Tom and Ellie were outside, she opened her soft-sided black case to stare at the plastic baggies, the Bible, that unopened letter. She had no idea what she was going to do now with all that stuff. At this rate, she might be lugging that case around for the rest of her life, which might not be a whole lot longer. She could tell Tom about the tumor, and probably should. She trusted him, and they depended on each other. She thought that a guy who'd been to war, who'd defused bombs, would understand about nightmares and monsters. Yet every time she considered telling him, she felt that familiar prick of fear. Once people knew about the tumor, they changed. They were awkward, their eyes darted away, and she could feel their relief when they escaped. Worse, she knew exactly what they thought. Better her than me. Fear held her back, but there was something else. True, Tom had been in the right place at the right time, but his family was in Maryland. He had said that he was due to deploy again in December. So why come all the way to Michigan for a camping trip with his team leader? Because Tom hadn't seen him enough in Afghanistan? It didn't make sense. Wouldn't someone heading off to combat again want to spend time with his family? And why couldn't Tom sleep? Was it because of what he saw when he closed his eyes? She didn't ask, but she sensed from the way he looked at her, how he sometimes took her hand or touched her arm, or how he treated Ellie with such care and patience that Tom was afraid. Of losing them? Maybe. Or maybe the fear went much deeper, to something he'd already lost. As strong and capable and brave as he was, Tom had his secrets, too. Still, there were other times when their eyes met and his scent deepened to a complex spice, and then her heart gave this little jump. Sometimes she let herself think about how his lips might feel against hers. Sometimes she thought about more, what it might be like to really let herself go, and wondered if he had the same thoughts. But she did nothing about that, said nothing, didn't ask. There was a monster in her head. Not telling wasn't fair or right, but then no guy would want her if he knew, not even Tom. So she zipped up the case and stowed it away again in her fanny pack and decided not to think about it. By the end of the first week of November, 6 weeks after the zap, they still had not changed, but the weather had. Tom stomped in with an armload of firewood to break the news, which Alex confirmed by simply stepping outside and looking north. The day was gray and the wind was up, so she got a good whiff, that edge of chilled aluminum, and eyed the dense blanket of clouds, pot-bellied and slate-gray. No need for her special spidey sense this time. Snow. Uh-huh. And probably sooner rather than later, Tom said. We need to decide. Go or stay. Beyond the kitchen, she could hear Ellie folding laundry and talking to Mina in the front room. Tom, I don't know. What if we stayed? No one's bothered us, and we know it's not safe to go to a city yet. Every night, she and Tom clustered around the ancient radio atop the lookout tower, trying to glean as much information as they could. More often than not, all they got was static, but from the few broadcasts they'd picked up, they knew that both coasts were virtual dead zones, either burning or radioactive or both. Everywhere else was chaos, and there didn't seem to be much of a government, at least in the U.S. They'd heard enough to understand that Stan hadn't been the only one to drop. A lot of people, tens of millions, had died in those first few moments. They knew something more was going on, too, from the garbled stories of cannibals and crazed zombies and kids going suddenly insane. In fact, kids came up a lot. There's plenty of wood, she said now. We've got water and food. Yeah, but that's now. We'll need more food come spring. We could hunt. There are a lot of bullets down in the cellar. We've got more guns, and there's the bow. But we'll run out of other supplies eventually. Then we either learn to make candles and soap and toothpaste and clothes, or we leave the station and the park and go find supplies. That could take a very, very long time. And then we have the not-so-little problem of gathering enough and getting it back up here. And what if one of us gets really sick?
What about all your battlefield medicine stuff?
That's not the same as being a doctor, and you know it. Even if I were, I'd need supplies. So we have to leave. It's just a question of when. Either we hunker down until spring, or leave now while we still can, and before other people start showing up to take what we've got.
No one's come yet.
But they might. People are desperate. They might come walking out of those woods just like we did. And then what do we do? Fight them off? Let them in?
Tom, once we leave, there's no telling what might happen. There's no government, no one in charge other than maybe the military, and who knows what they're doing.
She had another thought.
Wait a minute. You're in the army. Where's the nearest base?
South, Wisconsin. There's Sawyer Air Force Base here in the Upper, but that closed a while ago and got turned into a tiny airport and a pretty dinky museum. Couple planes on static display, mainly. Most of the original buildings are still standing, but there won't be any soldiers based there now.
Maybe we should try to go south, then.
He shook his head. The military's going to be way more interested in protecting itself than helping us. Trust me on this. They've got